I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Can we try some of these? And so then we can have, like, the best, funniest, smartest podcast ever?
I'm already hopped up. I already dosed up.
You dosed up on Alpha Brain?
On Alpha Brain.
Okay, all right. Hit me with the Optimind.
Optimind.
Smart drugs are having a moment. There's a TV show called Limitless about a miracle drug that turns an ordinary guy into a genius. There's the growing popularity of nootropics, a group of drugs that are supposed to make you smarter. And meanwhile, the booming world of esports has been shaken by scandal after a player admitted that his team was on Adderall during a tournament. This week on Radio Motherboard, we'll be talking to Steve Cronin, who became a self-taught nootropics expert after Lyme disease caused him to lose some of his mental ability. We'll also be talking to an esports journalist who's been watching the doping scandal go down. And we'll even try out some of these so-called smart drugs on ourselves. Hello and welcome to Radio Motherboard. This is Adrian Jeffries. I'm managing editor of Motherboard, and I'm here with Emmanuel Myberg, our games editor.
Hi.
And Steve Cronin. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Steve, tell us who you are.
Well, I am, I suppose, currently a YouTuber. I've been making...
A YouTube star.
Woohoo! I've been making videos about like smart drugs, nootropics, biohacking pretty consistently for the past 6 or 7 months, I would say.
So you have an educational YouTube channel. Would you say that's fair?
It's a slightly educational YouTube channel.
It's an educational, health-focused YouTube channel and focuses on this like incredibly large, wide-ranging group of drugs called nootropics.
That is correct, yeah.
And am I pronouncing that right?
I've heard many people, both like way smarter than me, pronounce it both ways, nootropics, so.
Or
go for it.
What is the short name for it?
There's a short name for nootropics? I can learn something.
I've seen people call them newts.
Oh, shorthand. Yeah. Okay. I personally don't say that, but
get those newts. Steve, did you bring some newts for us today?
I did. I brought three different one standalone nootropic, which I'll kind of define what that means in a second, and then two what are referred to as stacks. So, firstly, what I brought is phenylparacetam, which is in this amber vial right here. And phenylparacetam is a precursor for, we think, about three neurotransmitters. So acetylcholine, we suspect GABA, and then dopamine. It gets kind of tricky here when you talk about what substances like invigorate or cause like what neurotransmitters and then what they do, because at the end of the day, like, we don't really know. But phenylparacetam is a nootropic that invigorates those three neurotransmitters. So acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter responsible for like focus and memory. So the more of it you have, the more of those things ideally you get. Dopamine gives us our sense of like movement, like where our bodies are positioned in space. This particular effect has kind of like a bodily type energy, something you might experience while you're running.
Can I see this little amber bottle? Okay, so
of course,
this looks like very, this looks like an apothecary thing. It's like this little tiny bottle, so I'm guessing small amounts of this stuff must be pretty powerful.
Yeah, the standard dose that I take, and that's really what I would prefer to talk about, is about 100 milligrams. So it's pretty small. That, you know, if you want to kind of subjectively gauge that and eyeball it, it'd be about maybe a fourth of the size of like a pea. So quite small, yeah.
Cool. And what else have you got?
So what I have next is something called Nexus from Axon Labs, which is a pretty new company. This is a stack. So like phenylparacetam is just kind of like one nootropic, like a singular that you would take for a specific thing. A stack is something that an individual or a team designed to blend together different nootropics to try to like achieve a certain result. So this particular one has several ingredients, but I suppose two primary ones are the ones worth going over, which is aniracetam and choline. And so aniracetam is similar to phenylparacetam in the sense that it really invigorates the acetylcholine neurotransmitter. So it's an acetylcholine precursor. So again, that's increased memory, increased focus, or at least those subjective senses of those things. How you actually measure them, it gets a lot trickier. And then choline being also an acetylcholine precursor. So they pair really well together. And this is something that I use when I don't have my little vials of powders laying around that I have time to mix with water if they happen to be water soluble, or with bulletproof coffee or something if they're fat soluble. And so I'll keep these at work or something to take without, you know, freaking people out by mixing different powders from vials into cups.
We're getting super into the weeds with this already, which is awesome. I feel like we should take a step back, though, and say, like, what broadly is going on? Like, what is the interest in nootropics now? Like, it's kind of having a moment. Like, Emmanuel, you brought your own nootropic that you've been trying.
I did. I brought my bottle of Alpha Brain, which is from a company called Onnit, and it's an all-natural nootropic, I'm told. And also, it is supposed to increase my memory and focus. I've been taking it for about a week.
And did you just do that on your own? Like, you wanted to try it and you thought it might make you smarter?
I mean, I don't need to be smarter, but...
obviously.
Since we have this week of stories coming up, I wanted to see if it could improve my performance in video games, similar to the way that we've heard recently that players have been taking Adderall to become better players. And so far, results have been mixed.
It's really interesting to me because nootropics, smart drugs, I mean, these are pretty old technologies, as it were. So aniracetam, for example, I believe was conceived in the 1970s. So for us, that's over 40 years ago. And aniracetam is probably one of the most popular nootropics still today. So that doesn't really say too much in terms of why is it popular, but it does say, like, we probably haven't come that far in this kind of area of drug use in that amount of time, whether that's due to lack of research or just brief surges of interest that are kind of, you know, smaller type communities of people that they get into it and they fade. Or maybe the literature isn't there. Some of the kind of most interesting work I've come across has been from an author, Michael Hutchison, who wrote this book called Megabrain in the early 90s, I believe. And so that's like kind of the last really solid resource that in kind of contemporary culture that I found regarding this stuff before someone like Dave Asprey or something that has come along more recently.
And Dave Asprey is the founder of Bulletproof Coffee, which is the coffee with butter in it. And
Yum.
That's supposed to be good. I know. It's great. Okay, what's the last thing that you brought? It's a white bottle and it says Optimind on it.
Yeah, so this is Optimind. And the reason I brought this one is to kind of distinguish from the kind of two synthetic type nootropics that I brought. This was one is actually a little similar to Alpha Brain in the sense that there isn't something like aniracetam in here. So this uses like huperzine A to kind of as the acetylcholine precursor instead of like some substance that was created, you know, by a chemist to do that. But the real reason I brought this is subjectively for me, I really got into this product because it is what kind of got me away from drinking energy drinks maybe about a year ago. And it provided that same subjective sense of what an energy drink gave me, and a lot of the ingredients here are similar, without all of the sugar or and none of the kind of like, oh my gosh, I feel so terrible 4 hours later.
Okay, so can we try some of these? And so then we can have like the best, funniest, smartest podcast ever.
I'm already hopped up. I already dosed up.
You dosed up on Alpha Brain?
On Alpha Brain.
Okay, all right. Hit me with the Optimind.
Optimind.
Is this going to keep me awake? What if I take lots of NyQuil later? I have a cold for background for listeners. If you couldn't tell from my voice.
You don't recreationally take NyQuil in the evening.
No. Yeah, I'm not that sad.
So the short answer is I don't know in terms of if it's going to keep you up.
This answer comes up a lot in the science of nootropics.
I think that's the safest answer. It's probably why. In my personal experience, if you were to try to fall asleep around, what time is it right now?
5:30.
Yeah, so if you want to fall asleep in 5 hours, for me, that would be absolutely fine.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to take one since I'm really small.
Boom.
Thank you.
Done.
Should I take one of the other ones?
No, I would not mix them.
Don't mix nootropics, kids.
Unless you're making your own stack and you know what you're doing, in which case, be careful.
Be careful and watch Steve's YouTube channel. How do they find your YouTube channel?
Yeah, youtube.com/Steve Cronin. I do like nootropic reviews. I have a video called How to Make Your Own Smart Drugs, which is actually a very, very basic intro into what we just told people not to do unless they were really educated. But it's there for the people who don't know what they're doing. And it's like, what's the safest like kind of combination that you can come up with on your own and make and kind of demo with a blender and some powder. So,
okay, that sounds super fun. I'm gonna watch that later. So for now, we're gonna cut to an interview. We thought it would be interesting to talk about a related story. Along with the nootropic craze, there's also an esports craze, and within the esports craze, there's been like a minor snafu scandal.
I'd call it a scandal.
Scandal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Scandal. I think qualifies.
The first scandal of esports.
Not
here.
The first, but drug-related doping.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
So this is like the analog is like taking steroids in baseball or at the Olympics or something.
That's right.
People supposedly doing Adderall before their big esports game.
Yeah, and this all comes from one throwaway comment from a Counter-Strike player who goes by Semphis. And during an interview, he just mentioned that during a previous tournament, he and his entire Counter-Strike team, Cloud9, which is one of the biggest Counter-Strike teams in North America, he said, we were all on Adderall.
We were all on Adderall. Like, I don't even give a fuck. Like, it was pretty obvious, like, if you listen to the comms, like, I don't know, people can hate it or whatever. Everyone does
Adderall at ESAOlan, right?
Yeah.
So, just throwing that out there for the fans. That's how you get good.
We're going to hear from Rod Breslau, who is an esports commentator and former player and somebody who's been involved with the scene for like 15 years, and he just knows a lot about it.
And also there was one of the esports leagues banned Adderall use.
Following that interview,
right.
The ESL, which is one of the biggest organizers of tournaments, announced that they will begin testing players for Adderall use.
Yeah.
Following WADA's sort of list of banned substances.
Great. Let's talk to Rod.
So I'm Emmanuel Myberg. I'm the weekend editor, and I am here with
Rod Breslau, otherwise known as Slasher.
And Rod, I don't know many people that know esports as well as you do. Can you just tell us a little bit about your background and how long you've been involved with the scene and stuff you did?
Yeah, sure. I've been involved in competitive gaming and esports for probably about 15, 16 years now. Initially started as a player, a competitive player, mainly in the Doom, started off with that, then went to Warcraft 2, and then played a lot of Quake 2 as a kid. And the Quake series for the last 12, 13 years has been a strong part of my heart. And I've been a journalist, broadcaster, enthusiast for in the community and in the scene for quite a long time now.
Yeah, and we're here. I wanted to ask you about the issue of doping and esports. And this is something that
I can't wait.
This is something that we heard a lot of rumors about, I think, over the years. But the reason this story blew up this year, the whole thing comes from one throwaway comment from a Counter-Strike player. His name is, I think you pronounce it, Corey Friesen.
Mm-hmm.
His
otherwise known as Semphis.
Semphis, that's right. And he
I think it was earlier this year, he admitted that he and his team at the time, Cloud9, were, quote, all on Adderall during a tournament in March. This made a lot of headlines. The New York Times covered it. The ESL, which is the organization that put on the event, announced that they will start drug testing players. Rod, as someone who's been covering this for so long, what was your reaction when you first saw this story blow up?
This is something that I have been asked about numerous times over my career in esports and gaming. I have been asked this question for numerous mainstream gaming publications many, many years ago and throughout the years, continuously, this same one about doping in esports. This one was probably the most profound explosion of the question for this because of the headlines and how big esports has grown over the years, how much Counter-Strike has grown, and then this specific player and him being on one of the biggest North American teams, then that enacting ESL and their announcement with one of the largest anti-doping agencies, WADA, who, you know, seems legitimate. They were
the world anti-doping agency. Yeah.
They were behind the recent Russian, I think, Winter Olympics.
Yep.
Issues that went on. So, you know, this is a serious thing. And because of that, this is much more of a topic, I think, maybe now we're talking about than it was before. So I will say it is pretty complicated. I have admittedly heard over the years from firsthand sources being told directly and secondhand that there have been several instances of players taking Adderall or an amphetamine-like substance, usually, before games in official competitions.
What do you think it was about that interview, though, that made it catch on like it did? I mean, if you watch the interview, it's really, like I said, it's a throwaway thing that he mentions. And was that the clearest public admission that we've ever heard of in this industry? Or is it, like you say, is it the first time we've heard about it since esports really became much bigger than it has been in previous years?
Well, to put some context in it, he is now no longer part of Cloud9. So already there is a little bit of, you know, you have to look at that statement very carefully in the context of him and where he is in esports and not being part of that team anymore. At the same time, because of how large Counter-Strike is and Cloud9 being probably the number one team in North America and how much publicity those guys get and the attention and the eyes that are on that team, that's why it mattered so much more now, especially with Counter-Strike being some of the biggest focus for ESL and a lot of the events that they're doing. They've did a lot of Dota 2 for the last 2 years, but Counter-Strike for the last year has had a huge focus and rebound from when they used to do it a long time ago. So when you put all those factors in together, I think that's why now these things were taken a lot more serious than in previous times.
Yeah, and we should say that Cloud9 and the players that Semphis was referencing that he played with at the time, they didn't wish to comment. Semphis didn't want to comment, who I think understandably is kind of waiting for this whole thing to die down and go away. He is still competing, right? He's with a big team. Complexity, right? And mm-hmm. and he did not wish to comment, we should say. Do you think that Adderall and doping in esports in general is as big of a problem as this story made it out to be?
I have admittedly wavered back and forth on this from, yeah, it's a pretty big problem, to, nah, in retrospect, comparative to all the other things going on in esports, it's not really a big problem. And now I'm back into, I think this was something that had to happen, you know, sometime in the continued progression of competitive gaming and esports. I believe that it has, and I have been told that it has happened in previous tournaments, especially in the first-person shooter community, and then especially in the console first-person shooter community. This has been more prevalent than I have heard in other RTS or MOBA, Dota, or even fighting game like communities. At the same time, you know, I don't want to make it overblown and say that all of these champions have been on Adderall. I do not believe that. I do not believe that is a legitimate claim. That I would think the majority of people, and you would say that there is no potential instance of cheating involved or a substance involved. I think that it has happened, and I would believe that, you know, it could still happen, which is why this is necessary, these guidelines for to come into place. But I also don't think it's as widespread as, you know, there would be gigantic names to fall if there were testing done retroactively, though I really do not want to eat those words. So that's not true.
So I was in a ESL event in New York. It was a Dota 2 event. And I went there, honestly, hoping to see what the testing looked like or if there was like a tent where the players would be tested because the ESL announced that it would test players. But when I got there, I found out that they are only testing for Counter-Strike tournaments right now. And from what I gather, and I think you just mentioned it, is that where there have been cases of esports players using Adderall, it's been with first-person shooters, and it's been specifically with North American teams. Is that right? And if so, why is that?
Well, from what I have heard and seen, I do think that European players are part of it too. But it feels just like that Adderall specifically got big in America as like a culturally, it's an American thing that kids or get treated with Adderall to treat ADD. And that's like a much bigger thing, it seems like, in America than it is in Europe, not just gaming, but in general. So you infuse that with gamer culture. FPSs have always been a very strong point in esports history. Americans have played first-person shooters. They were the reason that Counter-Strike, Americans were huge into Counter-Strike. Americans were huge into Quake. Americans were huge into Halo. Americans were huge into Call of Duty. And a lot of those trends still are like that to this day. I mean, Americans do play, of course, League of Legends and Dota and games like StarCraft and fighting games too. But we like to shoot people here in America. So you combine with a culture that I think takes Adderall probably more than other nations and other I would say the majority of Europe or Asia, even though I don't really know firsthand, admittedly, of what their drug habits are over there. And then the ease of being able, availability of getting these types of drugs and to purchase them offhand without prescription or to get prescription very easily. And then with the amount of players that play FPS games. And then there is some particular thing I probably would say about a first-person shooter games that are more Twitch-like, where, you know, there is strategy involved in first-person shooter games, of course. And whether it's Counter-Strike or Quake, there is strategy and tactics involved in playing the game. But it's different than it is, where it is in a strategy game like StarCraft or League of Legends, where Twitch movement and aim is very important in first-person shooters. And it would feel and seem like amphetamines would fit that mold and that role much better than a strategy game.
Yeah, that is confusing to me because you're a big Quake fan, and I'm big into first-person shooters, and I've played League of Legends and Dota 2 and games like that, StarCraft, which are way bigger in the esports scene than, I mean, League of Legends is the biggest one and Counter-Strike is big, but not nearly as big. But one thing that they talk about with StarCraft, for example, or at least that I remember that people used to talk about a lot is APM, actions per minute, right? Which sounds like a very twitchy, like fast-paced thing. And I'm wondering, why do you think, I mean, it seems like all these games would benefit from being really your cognition somehow enhanced by Adderall. Why do you think it would be? Is there something about the way you play a first-person shooter and move around a level and having to put your cursor on a player's head? Is there something inherent about the genre that would benefit more from Adderall?
I mean, I have a decent amount of experience playing RTS games and StarCraft, but I have way more playing first-person shooter games and what that's like for me to say that it feels like it's more intuitive and inherent when you're playing a first-person shooter game in a 3D world and you have to kind of make decisions and move and there's movement as like a character and that feels different to me than an over-the-head top type of game where it's just where the adrenaline would go. But honestly, I can't make that claim entirely because, yeah, you know, those Brood War players, StarCraft players, APM really does matter. How fast you can move your fingers on the keyboard matters way more than it does in a first-person shooter. That does not come into play in first-person shooters. It's really not at all about how much APM you have. It's a completely different type of gaming experience. It feels like that experience of being in a 3D world and shooting, having to shoot things and be very quick in your reaction time of aiming from one person to the next person and deciding what you want to do works better with amphetamines than a strategy of having.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And to think ahead and having to, you know, of course it's about your movement and how many actions you can take, but a lot of it is a different type of gaming. So it might still be more the culture of it just Adderall being easier to get and to use here in America in general than it is in other places.
Yeah, I would say that is a good difference, though, the first-person shooters being very reactionary. It's about reaction times more than a StarCraft game where you are planning ahead and you have to do things very quickly, but it's more like chess where you're trying to plan several moves ahead. Do you think it can actually significantly make a player better? If I take Adderall, will I see a significant increase in my ability? Or is this just more of something that's passed around with players or something that's helping them train for longer hours? I mean, if you take steroids or something, you're going to see some sort of boost in your performance. But I'm not sure it's so clear-cut with esports. Do you think if I take Adderall right now, will I play better if I just jumped in a game of Counter-Strike?
You know, I mean, of course it's going to be different for every person out there and their reactions to these types of things. But I have been told that by players that have competed in international tournaments that they played better with the use of Adderall and that they know other players that also place very highly on these substances. Now, this was way more in the past than I think in the present, especially with the current climate of esports. But yeah, I do believe that it definitely can. There's a reason that it is what it is and how much, you know, students use it and college students use it and people use it to work and to write and to do things. I mean, it's a widespread thing that I think it definitely can, in the right hands, enhance your gaming experience and make you more focused and be able to produce better in the game. And for others, no, it will not work at all. At the same time, there is reason to believe that sustained use, longer than, like, if you are taking it for a one-day event, or even 1 to 2 days, then it would probably be easier than over a long period of time where the come down from it is extremely high and it is unattainable to be able to continue doing such a large dose. And with Adderall, from what I know, you build up a decent what's the word I'm looking for? Tolerance to taking it. So you would have to take more and more, and that's also not sustainable just because of, you know, the come up and come down. When you're playing a very long land tournament, like a good example, the Dota Major, Dota 2 Majors are happening right now this weekend in Germany, and it's a week-long tournament with group stages and then land matches throughout the week. That it would be very, very difficult to be able to do Adderall at these events. So for these long events, the teams would have to, like, guess, like, what day they would want to use it. Oh, maybe we want to save our Adderall for, like, the quarterfinals. Or maybe we have to do it in the group stage. But then, how are they going to be mentally if they're not on it from quarterfinals? Or if they had to do it again with their quarters, how are they going to sustain that again for the third day? When you get into some things like now with logistics in that form, I think that alone will deter a lot of people from doing it. So I think it is, it is both ways. Yes, I really do believe it. It can help you game. At the same time, it just might not be feasible a lot of the ways beyond just the drug testing itself.
Yeah, I think that's not something that people think about is how long esports players play for. I mean, if it's a soccer match, it's 90 minutes with some overtime. If you're at a Dota championship or something, like, you could be playing for how many hours a day? Like,
you could be playing all day, or you're playing and you're waiting all the time. And it's not even, it would be the opposite effect when you are a team that's waiting. If another two teams are having an extremely long best of three and it's going all the way where it's a Dota match or a Counter-Strike game, and you have to wait 3 hours and you're waiting to, like, pop it, and when it's going to kick in, it's very difficult for that. So players are playing very long periods of time every day in what could be, 4 to 5 days.
Like a professional event in a day could be playing for easily like 6 hours, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these things have been extended a lot more. Like traditionally in the older days, we'd have like 2 or 3 days weekend events, which would still happen a lot right now in esports. But a lot of the bigger championships have been moved to 5 days to a week, or even like 2 weeks to a month, like a longer champ, which we've seen in League of Legends, etc.
Yeah. And I think that's something, there was a few weeks ago, we saw some teams trying to put a teams union together and make demands out of organizations like the ESL that put on these events. And one thing that came up is the number of games they were willing to play in a day, right? They wanted to basically have shorter days, which is an understandable demand. And I could see definitely, from my experience, I think in high school, we took Ritalin, right? For like for the weeks where it was like crunch week and you were just taking tests all day. And I could definitely see if you're taking tests for 6 hours a day, hour four rolls around, you just feel drained. You take Ritalin, which is not that, it's like kind of in the same family as Adderall. And I could see how that would definitely help if you're playing for 6 hours a day to pop one of those and just keep going. So, like we said, the ESL is testing right now. And in order to put its testing together, they talked to WADA. And they are just taking their methods wholesale. So whatever is on WADA's list of banned substances is on the ESL's list of banned substances. And that means cannabis as well, which seems silly and seems like an unnecessary thing to add. But for now, at least, their line is, we're just doing what WADA is doing. What do you think about that? Do you think that's the right way to go? They should just follow WADA and they should just follow their procedure?
Well, they did clarify that marijuana use is prohibited only during the event days and when the event goes on. So the day before, the day after, and every event throughout their life, you are allowed to smoke marijuana, just not specifically on the days of the event, which I can't say is incredibly unfair. I mean, even if you're a prescription smoker and it's still for fun use and/or for medical use. I mean, it's not so bad to not be able to do it for a few days. But in general, for them to be with WADA, I mean, I think that it's shown to be a respectable company that does good work. I think that their recent findings and investigations into the Russians is a good example that they can do you know, good stuff. So for ESL to partner with them seems like a good move and a win. I don't think they partnered with like a shady organization in that way. So yeah, it feels like this is a good step for them to take it. All of the guidelines are in there wholesale. Maybe there needs to be some tweaking done specifically for esports, but it is targeted generally at amphetamine substances because those are the ones that you think are going to be helpful the most. Maybe we'll see newer mind-altering type. I don't mean like hallucinogens. I meant more, you know, just things that could help your brain be better.
Nootropics.
Yeah. I think that might come into play more specifically in esports, and that'll have to be the thing that we look out for going forward. I really do think it is a step forward for the industry. As esports is growing up and competitive gaming is getting larger, it is necessary for it to go forward.
That was Rod Breslau talking about the use of Adderall in esports. We're going back to the studio now to unpack this story and compare it to what's happening in nootropics.
I'm just wondering, like, where is this line for drugs that are enhancing your performance and giving you an unfair advantage, supposedly, and like coffee or Red Bull, which like they drink Red Bull all the time at these things, right? They must.
Yeah, they do. And energy drinks are big sponsors for esports events, Monster and Red Bull.
Yeah. So what's the difference between an energy drink and something like Adderall?
I think that is part of a much bigger, more complicated question about what is performance enhancing in an unfair way. Like, if you get a better night's sleep, you're going to do better if you're an athlete.
Right. Or breakfast, good breakfast.
Right. And so if I take a sleeping
breakfast
pill.
Breakfast of Red Bull.
If I take a sleeping pill the night before, is that doping?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Steve, what you think about the basic difference between the stuff that you brought in that's dietary supplements and something like Adderall. Are all these dietary supplements less powerful?
So I think not. And I guess to kind of cut back a little bit, I would say that so with Adderall specifically and probably most psychoactive drugs and substances, I would say we actually really don't know too much about how they work or what they do. Adderall specifically, like we think and we suspect that they invigorate dopamine and norepinephrine. Dopamine we briefly talked about. It's, you know, a reward chemical. It's it has to do with your movement and sense of energy. Norepinephrine, really strongly tied with a sense of like motivation. Like, yes, like I'm so pumped to do this. But those are really just correlations of kind of like changes in a physiological system that we measure to someone subjectively saying, I feel this way. And that's, I think, generally true across the board in psychoactive substances. So now in regards to like the difference between Adderall and perhaps like an energy drink like Monster or Red Bull, I would definitely say there is, however, a huge difference in that, like, the can of Monster you're drinking doesn't have these, like, huge dopamine and norepinephrine precursors in it. Like, the feeling that you get from taking a dose of Adderall that will last for, at least in my experience, when I've taken it, lasts for, like, upwards of 12 hours versus the experience you have when you take, when you drink a can of Red Bull is pretty different subjectively, but also like when we look about how we think the physiological processes might work.
So Steve, we didn't talk about yet how you got into nootropics and like what made you interested in it.
Yeah, so I first got at least interested in the idea of cognitive enhancement in general in 2007. And that was the year I was diagnosed with chronic Lyme disease. I was staying in New Hampshire during a summer, living with my stepbrother, and started developing these very curious symptoms, mostly revolving around my sense of cognitive performance, I would say, which was then later confirmed and measured of during like a psych eval of like, here, like, if you take everybody, like, here's where I am below average of people with like this specific type of memory, like sensory memory or something. So I had this huge cognitive decline, and It took me several months, probably about 6 months or so, maybe a bit longer, to discover that it was Lyme disease that was affecting me in a certain way. And I had to take antibiotics every day for well over a year to kind of treat that. But during that time, when I had physicians telling me, there is no route, like you have these mental deficits because of a bacterial infection, and therefore you need antibiotics, I kind of like, well, I was like, well, you know, maybe in a way, like that's terrible, like that's too bad that a physician is telling me that. But now I feel like I have the freedom to kind of like explore this area on my own since I don't have the help of my physician. And so that's when I really started reading about nootropics and smart drugs for the first time.
So your doctors told you basically, this is all we can tell you to do. You can take these antibiotics and you'll feel a little better, but you won't be back to normal.
Yeah, and I was offered some pharmaceuticals, including Adderall, actually, and then some antidepressants as well to try to combat the presumptive deficits of neurotransmitters in the brain. And kind of like I said earlier, like we have a really poor understanding of how that works anyway. And in my experience with these pharmaceuticals, the side effects are incredibly nasty. So while they are different in the sense of nootropics, like something like aniracetam, in the sense that they are much more powerful, and nootropics like aniracetam, piracetam, even the stuff in Alpha Brain are much more subtle, the reward in that is that you don't have all these side effects. And to me, that's been the main like big difference. And so that's the path I chose to explore after doctors were like, hands off at this point.
So, Emmanuel, you're saying you would do the Adderall?
The Adderall?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would try Adderall, but I'm more afraid of Adderall as a drug that is attempting to treat a condition that is way more serious than nootropic.
Yeah, to me, Adderall seems like a more serious drug than these unregulated or less regulated dietary supplements, just because they're like sitting around the GNC with all the like. I don't know. It seems like it seems like not that serious of drugs. It's like
it's because creatine. It's,
yeah, like creatine or like tryptophan is something that I take, which I have no idea if it does anything, but supposedly it helps you relax. I don't know. Those drugs they seem safe. That's probably a dangerous way of looking at them. Like Adderall to me is like, Adderall's like pharmaceutical cocaine. It's like, or amphetamine. It's
I mean,
like
I
really
definitely,
serious.
I've met those, I know those kids from school who like had issues with that. Yeah, it can lead to other things. It's something that's prescribed willy-nilly. It's, yeah.
Well, so how dangerous, like how safe are these drugs? How dangerous is it to play around with? What's the worst thing that's happened to you?
In regards to the pharmaceuticals or the nootropics? Yeah, okay. So I had a really terrible experience actually with Nupept, which is, if I remember correctly, and that's actually quite funny because this was a drug that was supposed to improve my memory. It did the opposite in the short term. If I remember correctly, it invigorates the same neurotransmitter as aniracetam, so that would be acetylcholine. But I'd have to fact check that. And so I took this, and it was kind of like subjectively measured to be 50 to 100 times more powerful than something like piracetam or aniracetam, which are pretty low, subtle effect type nootropics on the scale of how effective are they. And probably within about 15 to 20 minutes, I had this sense of forgetfulness that was so severe. I was probably looked like someone who had OCD, like walking around like, did I lock my door? Did I close the fridge? Did I pour water in this cup? Oh yeah, it's right here. And so are two other cups filled with water. And it sounds kind of nutty. And now that I'm saying it out loud, it sounds kind of in a way unbelievable even to myself, kind of thinking about this since I made a video about Nupept on YouTube. But that essentially took me out of commission for, I would say, about 4 hours during that day. So the whole idea of self-experimentation, I think, is really bad. And I don't know why anyone would really want to do it. I mean, I suppose I have a decent reason in that I'm still searching for my mental capacities that I lost with the Lyme disease. And that's kind of going to be, I think, an ongoing journey that is definitely not confined to smart drug use, but involved with other disciplines as well, like contemplative practices, et cetera. So it's definitely very dangerous in terms of let me take 10 different smart drugs over the period of 3 months. And you probably don't, like if I had to work that day or get tasks done that day, I took Nupept, I would have had a real issue. But if you stick with some basic stuff like aniracetam, piracetam, choline, Alpha Brain, OptiMind, any of the stacks you can find or drugs you can find at GNC, you're probably okay.
And your YouTube channel is one of the resources that people have to look into this. What are other places people can look to do research? Like, I guess you can walk into your nutrition store and ask them what the heck this stuff does, or go on Reddit. Are those the best places?
Yeah, as ridiculous as this might sound to a significant number of people, I would say that the nootropics subreddit is a very, very solid resource for nootropics and smart drug information. The people who generally post there, in my experience, tend to be more on the scientific edge of the spectrum and not so much the subjective edge of the spectrum in terms of, I took this and I feel amazing, let's talk about it, versus... I took this and it really doesn't matter how I feel until later. Like, let's talk about actually what we know about what it's doing. And so in terms of a resource for someone who might want to take something in the future, the links kind of culminated in that location of whether they be like PubMed articles or whatever are pretty solid there in my experience.
What would your preference be? Do you kind of wish that the government would regulate this stuff so that we would know more about it? Or do you prefer the current Wild West climate where you can just order whatever off the internet and try it out yourself?
That is a really tricky question to answer because, so I suppose I have thoughts in on both sides. If I think about my personal experience, the thought and the idea of not being able to experiment this stuff when I was at my lowest point with Lyme disease, where I couldn't drive a car without you know, fear of hurting myself or another person, that is pretty scary to me. Not only did it give me something to do or give me a path to take charge of my recovery, but definitely when I started taking modafinil, branded Provigil, which happens to be regulated by the FDA, but also aniracetam plus choline, I did start to notice improvements. So I'm very thankful for the opportunity to do that without having something either be not available for use unless you got it illegally, because it was in a research phase and you couldn't get it, or another barrier of seeing a physician. At the same time, I know that if I was 20% less responsible than I am now, and I've been taking these all, probably but at this point, dozens of different smart drugs over the past couple of years, then I might have, the chances of me hurting myself are greater. So I definitely have some emotional feelings on both sides. I don't want people to get hurt, and I think that I would want every mechanism in place for people to be safe. At the same time, I really want to be able to, you know, keep the opportunity I had to help myself. So if I could travel back in time, I wouldn't want to be like, you know what, Steve, you can't do that because it's illegal. And it's like, well, okay, do I go to the corner of the street wherever and be like, hey, do you have any aniracetam?
Why aren't these the companies that are selling nootropics paying for studies just to sort of prove their effectiveness and advertise them? And I mean, the Alpha Brain I'm taking, they tout this study at the Boston Center for Memory, which was like a double blind test. So they ruled out the placebo effect. Why aren't more companies doing that?
Yeah, so Anna is definitely doing that. True Brain, I believe, also is doing something similar. Although I think that was developed within the confines of university, if I remember correctly, to begin with. I guess there's two answers. One is because most of the nootropics you find are crap and don't work. and then two, it's quite expensive to run those studies. So one of my favorite brands, NuStar Nootropics, which is the phenylparacetam I brought in the amber vial there. They actually sell their products not for human consumption, which is interesting. In that way, the FDA does regulate how you can kind of market stuff depending on what it is you're selling. The quality of it, I'm convinced, based on my personal experience and research, is super high. But they're not in the business of developing a product and going through these studies to be able to sell the product in the manner they want, because the cost for them would probably be too high. So my two answers, crap companies and too expensive.
What was the name of that nootropic you said that made you forgetful?
Nupept.
Nupept. Okay. So that's one to maybe stay away from. Cool. I guess before we close, I'm curious about your personal routine. What are you, what's your stack look like right now?
Is this like a morning till like early morning routine?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, the first part of every day is never consistent. And that's when I wake up because the snooze button on my smartphone is just too tempting for me. Mm-hmm. Once I do wake up, I drink some water. I walk my dog. I have a 2-year-old puppy. And I do about 15 to 20 minutes of mindfulness meditation that I learned through a private Buddhist school I went to graduate school for, called Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado. I make a bulletproof-ish form of tea. So I have like mate tea, and I use coconut oil, the grass-fed, unsalted organic butter, et cetera. And that is about it. So I am aware of morning routines being a pretty big thing, especially, I think, from my understanding and my experience, popularized by someone like Tim Ferriss, I would say. Mine is pretty simple and pretty basic. And that's probably because when my brain turns on, my thoughts are way too complex and I never get anything done. So simpler the better for me. But consistency is key for sure.
And what is it that the butter in the coffee is supposed to do, or the butter in the tea in your case?
Yeah, so it is your fat source. And so bulletproof coffee or bulletproof tea is kind of follows the ketogenic diet guidelines, which means you get your energy from burning fat instead of sugar, vaguely, but my diet knowledge is pretty low, so I'll stop there. But then also to curb your hunger, because in many cases, for a lot of people, that tea, that drink, or that coffee acts as a meal replacement for breakfast.
Well, I feel great. That was Radio Motherboard. I'm Adrienne Jeffries, managing editor, and I hope you'll tune in next week. Oh yeah, and don't do drugs.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.